Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm a Horticulture Week editor, Matthew Appleby, and today I'm with garden designer Peter Donegan. Now, Peter is the series garden designer for RTE Television's DIY SOS, The Big Build Island. And in April 2019, he designed an RHS Flower Show Cardiff garden and has designed more gardens for RHS shows subsequently, which we'll talk about later. And he was selected to represent Ireland to design and realise the Irish World War I Centenary Peace Garden in France in 2018. And he plans to return there in 2022, this year. And Peter was host of the pioneering Sod Show Garden podcast before gardening podcasts were even a thing. So welcome, Peter.
Matt, how are you? Happy New Year. It's long overdue. Great to hear your voice again.
Well, great to hear you from you too, Peter. It's an honour to have a legend of gardening podcasts on. Now, just to start off, just to kick off with that garden podcast at the Sod Show, it was well ahead of its time, in my view, but it's not around anymore. So what's your reflections on the Sod Show and what it meant for this sort of genre?
I think the Sod Show was, to be honest, Matt, it was a bit of a freak of a thing. It was around when podcasting wasn't a thing, and I think at its height at the Garden Media Guild Awards, I think it was up against the Guardian newspaper, the Royal Horticultural Society, and the BBC at one point in time. But I think it reached a crescendo where I think after about 10 years, I think there's something in my head where you always like to go out in a high. And it was never really announced why it came off the airwaves, albeit it still exists in the annals of history. But I think around the time, Dad had passed away, and I remember a moment where I looked down at my then younger daughter, and it was a case of, do you go and record another episode, or do you sit down and put your arms around her? And I obviously chose to do what good dads do, and that was that. And I think it went out on a high, and I think it was time. Other podcasts had come along the way, and ultimately, I think the remit we had was there really only was the BBC, the RHS, and the Guardian podcast with Jane Perron at the time, and it needed something new, and I gave it that. But it was good. I miss it dearly. I spoke to our esteemed colleague Stephen Bennett by phone yesterday, and we became, you know, very good friends because of that. And there's a litany of people, including yourself, who were part of that journey. And you look back on it, and I regret nothing of it. But I think I also had a point in time in my own business career where I just had to stop doing things that were for free.
I was going to say, Peter, who were your best ever guests?
God, that's a really difficult question, and I'm going to sound like my mom and say you're all my favourites. But I think there was a lovely episode in there where I interviewed Matt Biggs, and I couldn't get through to him on the phone, and because I only had 30 minutes to record an episode, and that's all I had to spare, we left in all of the mistakes because we'd no other choice. We just didn't have the time. But that one probably stands out, I think, a little bit. Bennett's one was good. Your own was obviously very good.
Obviously.
Yeah. Are there any
other highlights, though? I mean, what did you enjoy about it? What sort of made it float your boat?
I think when you get past the horticulture part of it and you end up in having conversations with people about how their brains tick, and I remember, I think, in Chelsea with Kate Gold, and she'd done the Greenfingers charity garden, and we were lying on the cargo net with people below us on press day. And it was ultimately a freak of a thing. But people, I think, seemed to warm to the fact that when it went wrong, it almost endeared you to it. And if there were squeaky trailers or people in the background giggling, we just sort of left it in. I'm unsure why it worked, Matt, but you know, when two grown men or a grown man and a grown lady are having a conversation about what makes you tick, and if that makes you smile, well then, you know, I don't really know what the story was with it or why it was successful, but it was, and I'm very grateful. But it comes down to the other person on the end of the line ultimately.
Well, I thought you were very good at questioning people and getting stuff out of them in a nice way. I mean, what were the sort of highlights in terms of revelations of things you found out that, you know, you didn't think that you'd ever find out?
I think because I'd studied horticulture and because my own career, like I was at 6 years of age, I think it's worth maybe noting, I knew what phototropism was at 6 years of age when nobody or Google didn't exist. I was doing rooftop gardens on top of multi-story car parks when I was 17. And I was out on my own in business at 24 years of age. And there was no sort of Cliff Richard, Top of the Pops, Terry Wogan chat show, if you will, answer that you could give me where people just accepted it. And I think when you're sitting with, you know, be it yourself or Andrew Fisher-Tomlin or, you know, Matt Biggs or the heads of RHS shows, and they're telling you that everything's a walk in the park. And behind the scenes, we are all aware, and I've been there where sponsorships have been pulled on show gardens and things don't always go according to plan. And I think when you're at that level with people and the conversation is just that, I think the honesty tends to come out, where maybe other podcasts are a little bit more about plants and a love of plants. And I just wanted to get deeper into how the person's brain sort of morphed. I mean, and again, I'll reference Kate in Why Would You Want to Go and Do a 2-3-story garden at Chelsea when you could do an on the flat. It was as simple as that. And sometimes the answer that she gave me maybe wasn't good enough, or maybe there was just a little bit of a daydreamer in me that wanted to go a little bit deeper. But people, the listeners seemed to like it. The people we interviewed seemed to want to be a part of it. And yeah, just a couple of, you know, it was almost like, as we used to say and we used to joke about, it was like sitting in a pub having a chat with your best mate. But in this case, it was about horticulture and it was in the middle of a field. And it just worked. It just worked.
Now we're turning a bit sort of poacher turned gamekeeper. I don't know if that's the phrase, but something like that anyway. But so, because I'm going to ask you the questions now. So you've designed gardens for RHS shows. You're talking about RHS shows there, and you know, Chelsea 2022 is just launching, a bit of a bounce back for that. Mm. But since you've not always they've always not always come to fruition, let's say that, for various reasons. I mean, how much of a frustration is that some of the gardens you've designed haven't actually happened in recent times?
The shoe very much is on the other foot, Matt. I think honestly, when you're asked to design a garden for the world's largest flower show, for the greatest horticultural organization in the world. You have to take that as some sort of compliment, or an absolute compliment, if I may. That it doesn't actually get there, you might say, is almost secondary, if not tertiary. And I won't deny that it is slightly frustrating when it happens a second or a third time. But it's, I also appreciate, Matt, it's nothing personal. It's the in the exact same way as somebody inviting you, a private client, to design a garden for them and things don't go according to plan or things change. There's nothing far different apart from it's on a higher platform, if I might call it that. But I can tell you for free, I wouldn't be on my own in those that have sponsors come to them. The gardens are designed, it's all ready to go, and it pulls the plug. And you know this as well as anybody. And over the last 2 years, maybe that's become a little bit more understandable. And I think that's probably a little bit where we've fallen. But as I said, when I was speaking at Futurescape and I was hosting the Future of Landscape Design talk for Jim and his team at Pro Landscaper, I certainly am not on my own in saying that there's been two Hampton Court Palace Flower Show gardens and one Chelsea Go, by the way. And these things just happen. But again, I'll say it, I'm certainly not on my own. And it's just part of business, and you get up, you dust yourself off, you try and find a sunshine on the horizon, if I might call it that, and make a new plan and you get on with it.
So what have you got lined up? Have you got anything along the, in those fields lined up?
Well, we're back in France. We'd obviously done the, I think it was one of 14 international garden designers selected to design in historic places to commemorate the centenary of the ending of World War One, alongside Andrew Fisher Tomlin. And I think he represented Wales and the Bassons, James and Helen, they represented England. Yours truly was obviously from the island off the coast of England. Then the castle got back in touch with us and said, would we redesign the internal courtyard to commemorate centenary, sorry, it's not centenary, my apologies, to commemorate the 30th anniversary of what is Europe's largest war museum contained within the castle. So we're in the process of relocating back to France. We were there before Christmas. And coincidentally, we have a peace park here in Dublin, which is to commemorate the soldiers, sailors and airmen for 2023 who would have fought alongside the British in the Great War. So there's something sort of, maybe because of what I've done in France in 2018, again in 2022 to be, I'm back to Dublin. I think we've obviously got series 3 of DIY SOS, which is, I think it was Ireland's most watched television programme last year. Season 2 is yet to air, so to be fair, that's keeping me quite busy. And we've just done a retail park for probably the largest manufacturer of stone in Ireland anyway and abroad, and that's Roadstone. They've got a retail park which is in the throes of travel, as you're probably well aware, is being slightly restricted. So there are gardens that are on the fore or are due on the horizon, but unannounced as yet, or I can't tell you just yet about them, Matt.
Fair enough. What's it like designing for TV compared to designing for real life?
I think if we take what is on the horizon for season 2, and this will put it in context, the Irish model of the programme, which I'm sure will be due to travel, the biggest one we did was 0.8 of an acre, and we built the entire house and garden in about, I think it was 8 days. So designing gardens is one thing. Designing gardens that have to be able to be built within 8 days is highly unusual. And to make that happen with, I think we had 183 volunteers, some skilled, some not. But I think you start to realise of what should be an 8-month build down to an 8-day build Things just happen at a speed. And I think if you don't know your shizzle, if I may, if you could be caught out. But the design has to, it has to work within that time frame where you're understanding that partway through floating concrete, a production company can walk in and make all machinery just get turned off. And then at the same token, I think weather waits for no man. It's almost like fast track show gardening, if I may. And when you get talking to people like Sherry Carman, and they're talking about building at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show, and they dig down on what was one of the wettest years in Hampton's history, and the hole in the ground then fills up. It's sort of at that level, if I might, but faster again. But I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I think the emotional part of it, Matt, is something I'm probably not built for, and maybe that's Irish genetics just in there. Probably not the best about talking about myself on a serious note. Good at talking, but not talking about myself specifically. But it's just an eye opener and a humbling eye opener into holding hands with a giant sized group of magical, wonderful, great big hearts to do something better for somebody else. And you tend to walk away from projects like DIY, and you can't really complain that your sponsorship was pulled for Hampton Court Palace Flower Show. In context, yeah, you can't. You just can't.
No, fair enough. Are there any of the UK shows you're particularly a fan of, and if so, why?
UK television shows.
UK garden makeover shows, yeah.
I'll be very honest, Matt, in saying I think growing up, I was very much the old man in the potting shed type thing. Very much when I was growing up, we were, but that's going back to the days when you've got six buttons on a television. A lot of your listeners wouldn't even remember what those things were. But now my own television has been disconnected for about 14 years, and I tend not to see it. I think the last thing I watched on television was when I was in Belgium in December, just gone. We were doing a little bit of work over there, and the A-Team came on in Flemish, which is, I know, not the answer you were looking for, but there you go.
The A-Team.
Yeah, brilliant. I know, Matt. I'm really sorry, but I'm a huge A-Team fan. But I genuinely tend not to get to see a whole lot of television. I think the last time I flicked on was to see the highlights of Chelsea Flower Show last year. And solely because logically travel restrictions were in place and I couldn't get there. So,
fair enough. Which member of the A team do you most closely identify with, Peter?
I didn't see this one going this way, Matt.
It's not scripted, that question.
I can tell you it's not either. I think most people would probably say Murdoch, but I would disagree with that. I genuinely like having plans in place. I might come across as being sort of...
I love it when a plan comes together.
Stop it. If you're smoking a cigar, that's not even allowed on television anymore. I like having plans in place. I like knowing what's on the horizon. I'm out of my comfort zone when there's not a plan in place for absolutely everything. And I think the way I would word it is, in 20 years, I've never had a garden design handed back to me, and I don't intend to start now. And I think when I do, even the television stuff, as humbling as it is, emotion has to be put to one side and logic has to prevail. And emotion never built anything for somebody who deserves it more than I certainly do. But I like having a plan in place. I hope that answers your question eloquently.
So what inspires you creatively as a designer?
We did a lovely garden for... this programme has aired, but we did a lovely garden for a girl called Amy Mulcahy, and Amy was involved in a boating accident. She was dragged below water for about 10, uh, 10 odd minutes and was told, quote unquote, not my words, that she was incompatible with life. When I first met her, her knuckles were being skinned going in through the front door. She was living in her front room, again, 13 years of age, where you went to the bathroom, where you slept and where you ate was in one place, and it just wasn't right. And we, I think as a collective, had this logic in our head that Amy's life would improve, that her quality of living would improve, and ultimately she would get better. And I'm unsure why I believed that that would be the case. I'm not the most spiritual nor religious person in the world. And so we designed a garden that didn't look like, if I may call it this, and I apologise for my language if I've got this somewhat incorrect, but I wanted to design a garden that didn't look like it was, inverted commas, a disabled garden. And in conversations with friends of mine, you'll agree with this and you'll understand this or appreciate it, you know, raised vegetable beds that are an arm stretch into the centre, there's nothing wrong with them, there's a place for them, and paths at minimum 900 wide. And I think we designed this giant size, big, huge pink gabion, 3.5, 4.5 meters long. But we've got our occupational therapist to measure her height to her waist, and the arcs of her knuckles of her hands for her walking assisted frame. And we built it into this big, huge, giant size pink gabion. The thing I loved about it was most, and I, this is a roundabout way of answering your question, but when we're talking about taking rocket ships, which double up as bird hides, and hide them in between 25, 30 centimetre girt trees, bring in 130-ton tower cranes and crane them in over a house because they're ultimate distractions for people, then I don't think the inspiration would come from, no disrespect, but from reading garden design blogs or looking at Pinterest pages. I understand that from a client's perspective. But invariably, most of the things that I would take inspiration from would be things that are quite sporadic in to others, or maybe might go by the way for others. And funnily enough, the catalyst for that 3.5 meter tall rocket ship requiring a 130-ton tower crane was actually a wee little spinny top. It almost looks like a simple Simon Says sort of thing you'd get in a lucky bag. And I remember sending it to a good friend now, Martin Stapleton, at about 3:30 in the morning. And I could see that he is typing thing was coming up on WhatsApp. And I text him back saying, give me 5 minutes, I'm going down to make coffee and I'll call you. And I did. And we came up with this design for this magical treehouse, but not a treehouse, but ultimately that's what it was, for a 6.5-year-old kid who deserved distractions between life that maybe wasn't as fortunate, if I might, as you and I would have it.
No, that's a fantastic story, an inspirational story in itself. Now, looking around the 2022, there's plenty of garden shows, garden events to look forward to, even though there's not much on quite yet. But Chelsea Flower Show got launched very recently, and I don't know if you've had much of a chance to look at the designs, but there's anything there which you would tip for the top, anything that you think is looked great?
At this moment in time, Matt, I'll be genuinely honest, we're actually mid-flow, and apologies to my esteemed colleagues of the horticultural world. I see Paul Hervey Brooks is back all right, and Paul is pretty much a stalwart of the game. I'm sure he'll breeze through it. I know Tony from Garden Club.
Tony Woods.
Yeah, Tony's back in as well. Another absolute gentleman. I spoke with Tony at Futurescape in the XL. But Tony is a class act. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what he comes up with. And I think the one thing about Tony is his finishing touches. He's a bit of a maestro. And I think possibly in this case, he, without being disrespectful in any way, but there's a little bit of dark horse about him, but I think I'd be pinning my money on what he would be coming up with. I haven't had that much time to go through them solely because I wasn't due back to work until this Thursday, my summer holidays, if I may. And I came back a week early because we're kicking off with season three, and I won't say I'm under pressure. I don't do pressure at all, but we've a private garden on the go in Belgium, and we've another private garden on the go in Germany. So traveling is about to kick off in between television recordings.
Yeah, cool. Well, you've been telling me you've been on the road non-stop. Like, how many days out of how many days have you been on the road recently?
I think at its peak between November and December, I got back about the 16th of December, and I think I did 34 or 33 days away, and I was home for 2 days, and then separately I was home for 32 minutes. Wow. which is a little bit unusual. Yeah, I think I was in London, I was speaking there, came back, hit the airport, picked up, got into the Jeep, gone for 2.5 weeks, came back home for 2 days, flew into Ghent in Belgium, if you have an Irish accent, Ghent, if you're actually living there, went into northern France, back to Belgium, and then back home again, and just in time for Christmas. Yeah.
What keeps you going though? What you know, all that time on the road, like what makes you think, crikey, I'm going to keep doing this? What makes you carry on enjoying it?
I think there's a, I'll go back and I'll reference the conversation, Matt, that I had with our good friend, Stephen Bennett. For those who are unaware, Stephen was the former head of shows, wasn't he?
For the RHS,
the brains behind Ascot Garden Show and a few others. And I think I was saying to Stephen, you know, we've three decent rules in business, and I wouldn't be on my own in this. Are they good people? Will it be a nice garden? And will we get paid is sometimes the one I tend to forget about. But when Futurescape call you and say, will you come and host a panel talk on the future of landscape design, when you ring me and say, the Smiths are playing, do you want to go to a do you want to go to a concert in a local pub in London, post an Arsenal match, or I'm unsure, post a garden talk. It's very hard, I think, sometimes to turn that down, Matt. But I was the Jarvis Cocker in my own head, or the geeky kid at 6 years of age growing plants under my bed. When horticulture wasn't what it is now, or certainly garden design wasn't what it is now and how it's perceived. And I think when, whether it's a castle or whether it's a private garden, but when somebody asks you to do the thing that you have always loved doing, pardon me for throwing in the cliche, and then offers to pay you for it, it's extremely humbling. On one hand, but when it's all you've loved, and I'll say what I said when I spoke in London last, it's like Arsene Wenger picking up the phone saying, would you like to play for Arsenal? There's no chance of you saying no. You're just going to go and do it. And I'll also be honest in saying I love being on the road. I found it very hard to sit still as a kid growing up. I was always that kid daydreaming out the window. I taught myself how to speed read so I could spend more time doodling gardens when I was 14 years of age, and so I wouldn't get into trouble. My brain is sort of that ilk. But I think ultimately, I think there's a love there for the whole horticulture industry, and maybe that goes back to when I'm asked the question of why would you do a garden podcast free gratis, albeit I have to give credit to C.D. Stone and London College of Garden Design, who were very generous in helping me out over the years. But the answer is, why would you do it? And there isn't any logic, bank balance, accounting response to that, you know. And there isn't, Matt. You know, sometimes you just have to put your hand on your heart and say, because I enjoy it.
Well, because we've loved listening to your voice so much, you're getting an extra 10 minutes in our podcast, Peter. So I'm going to finish off by asking you, you know, what is the future of landscape design then? That completely impossible question.
This was a really interesting one when it did come up at Futurescape, because the question I asked, I think the opening question I asked, my apologies, Matt, was, if you're offered £1 million by a fake grass company or 10 grand by a permaculture company, which sponsorship package would you take? And would that change what is perceived as the future of landscape design? Would it change how fake grass /permaculture is viewed by the public, or how it's presented, say, from a grand show? And I had this conversation with Tim Hell, who we would all be aware of in the industry, a gentleman and an absolute good friend at this stage of the game. And Tim reminded me that there already has been a garden with fake grass at Chelsea Flower Show. Anyway, I think it was around about 2010-12. He'd know better than I would.
Banned now, fake grass in Chelsea.
Well, there you go. But as a fictitious question, the point still stands that if it goes sort of that way and the money's behind it, then ultimately then that's what pushes what can become the next inverted commas trend. And to me, I think if the question is asked, is the future of landscape design, decking has had its run. Prior to that, you would have had Indian sandstone circles, and prior to that, you would have had the cobblock pandemic. Box hedging is slightly gone by the way. Their trends have come and gone and ebbed and flowed. Where it stands at this moment in time, I think the question may be at the top of the page, is it a line of pleached trees with porcelain paving and a swimming pool? I'm unsure, but that seems to be what is in vogue at this moment in time and has been for the last number of years. I think what's starting to happen is maybe people are starting to think a little bit outside the box. And I'm unsure if the Instagrams and the Pinterests maybe have a role to play in that. But I think from our client's perspective is really all I can comment on. What we're finding is people are calling and saying, we have this amount of money, we have this space, here's our lifestyle. Can you make us something that is not the same as what everybody else has, or ultimately what comes out of Peter's head that makes sense when you look at it? And we've had a greater, I think, request for that on one hand from private clients. And then on the flip side of it, I think there's probably a humbling privilege again where I'm part of designing gardens or bringing gardens to realization that are of historic merit and that tend to evoke a little bit more of emotion and memory. And when you get into those sort of commemorative gardens, it really is, when you see people with tears in their eyes because of something you've drawn from your head and from your heart, it really is a special thing to be proud of, Matt. So look, I think there's a place for absolutely everything. Where the future stands, what's the next trend? I'm unsure.
You haven't mentioned wild planting and natives. That's what the RHS is banging on about for Chelsea. Is there any role in that? In, you know, actually, you know, at the coalface where, well, actually people with real gardens want?
I think it's a funny question, Matt, when that comes up about native plants. And ultimately, I'll say what I've said before. I did a garden design series of lectures with Moscow College of Garden Design. We spoke very in depth about these titles of just native plants. And I can tell you, if we take it in what we did in France, we put in Crataegus monogyna, which is the hawthorn tree.
That's everywhere at Chelsea.
Absolutely. I'm delighted to see that one come back instead of the Betula Giacomontii. I know, no disrespect to that either. Again, there's a place for everything. But when we put in the Crataegus, we didn't have it formed. That's all we did. We didn't have it formed as something that was allowed to go off and do its own thing. We had it shaped as if it was something that you would see maybe in Hortus Loci. It was expertly trimmed to look like it was prim and proper, but obviously it's going to evolve from that shape. I think that's one part of it. But native plants, invariably, if they're from the British Isles, the geographic location, they're not very attractive, ultimately, as a collective, and they tend not to work. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I appreciate, but you certainly won't have a garden with a swimming pool and a collection of native plants around it. That's one. I think in the wildflowers, which had its, I suppose, platform maybe a couple of years back, and that tends to seem to have moved on when we've gone into how councils have done their planting, which is more of wild bulbs now. And if you go to the predecessor to both of those, you would have been in the bedding plant craze, which is still around, and again, it still has its place, but it's not as popular. But money, ultimately, I think in all of those three, seems to have, or certainly does play a role in it. It doesn't mean that my heart beats louder or less because of, but money ultimately is going to play a role. And if anybody disagrees with that, we'll make Hawthorne or Cretaceous £1 million per 25, 30 centimetre girt specimen, and I guarantee you that'll go by the way, and Birch will come back if it costs 10 quid. It's as simple as, it doesn't mean I agree with it or I like it, but ultimately that's what it comes down to. And so you're back to that future of landscape design question again, and money plays a huge role in it. We require benefactors, if I might, for show gardens to go ahead. Sometimes lesser budgets means designers have to be a little bit inventive, and when they become inventive, I think that's when you really see creativity come to the fore, and formulas sometimes go a little bit out the window.
Now, I said that was going to be our last topic, but I lied, Peter, because I'm going to ask you another question, which is, what is your desert island plan? We always ask our Hawk Week podcast guests this, and you're no exception.
You, me and you have spoke at length about this question, Matt, I should add. And you know that this is my... this. I text you, I would say, about once a month, saying, I can't believe you got that as an answer. But I'm, oh God, Lord, do I actually have, I think, to be quite fair about it, if I was to pick a tree, we have mentioned it, and I apologise, and I'm going to walk away from this wishing I had something, picked something else. But I've got two. I think the one that I would remember reading stories about, fabled in mythology, would be Cretaceous Monocaina, which is the hawthorn. And the tales of the little people that went with always fascinated me. But I think at this moment in time of recording, I think the Hamamelis mollis, I saw Mark Straver put up a beautiful collection of photographs somewhere on Instagram of a whole series of them in flower. And I remember showing one of the guys I work with from Colin, company called Colin Construction, Liam and Anthony. And I was saying to them, before you look at this, it reminds me of a series of photosynthetic luminous pipe cleaners back in the day when we used to make spiders with potatoes, and people actually could do these things as a form of entertainment. But I think they just always fascinated me as a plant, that when nothing else was in flower, the freaks, the David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust, if I may, of the horticultural world just came out to play. And yeah, there's something childlike in my head, maybe, Matt, that makes me smile when I see them.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Peter. Thank you very much to Peter Donegan for appearing on the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Matthew Appleby, Horticulture Week editor. And make sure you never miss the Horticulture Week podcast. Subscribe to or follow Horticulture Week podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. Thank you and goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.